Welcome to GleeCast, the somewhat occasionally weekly home of Glee and casting. Here are your hosts, Emily and Erica.
Hello and welcome.
Welcome to GleeCast.
That's right. That's what we're doing here. It's been a while. Another three-week hiatus, something like that.
Yeah, three weeks, 4 weeks? I don't remember.
I think it was three. They do that thing because it's March, February's over, so it's not quote-unquote sweeps month, so they're just like, we'll just do reruns. It's nice because it means I have time to cram in my other shows that week, so I'm not behind on Project Runway or Community or whatever else is airing. Actually, that's not true. I've been a week behind Community for the entire season so far.
I think I'm current on Community, I think. I'm pretty sure.
This week's is recorded, but I haven't watched it yet. But we do have other... I don't think we've done a Smash update in a while.
Oh, that's because that's the show I haven't been watching. I haven't. No, I watched the first two episodes, and then I completely forgot it was on because I can't DVR it because I have too many things going at that time.
Well, what I do at that time, because I don't know if you have the same problem I have, Face Off always airs at like 11 o'clock. So I just record...
Right.
Smash and Mindy Project and then Face Off at 11.
But usually Mike is over and we watch Face Off in the same night.
So he
leaves by like 11, so I can't record it at 11. But if it goes on at 9 and we started at 10, then we can watch it with no commercials.
Right. Understood.
So that's why I can't record Smash. I'm not current on it. But tell me what's going on.
Well, it drove me crazy the first week. Because the first week, it was two episodes, but Time Warner on their, whatchamacallit, their... on demand, they had it as one episode, so I couldn't like watch one episode and then the other episode. I had to watch them both, and it's not like you can fast forward, so I couldn't watch the one and then get back to it. So I had to watch the one and then I had to watch the other one on Hulu. It was very confusing, and I know Hulu and all that stuff is great, and it is awesome to have access to everything, but it just so like the commercials bug the fuck out of me. I have DVR, so I don't have to deal with them because it's a 42-minute show, and with commercials, it's 1 hour, and it's really upsetting. But anyway, what's been happening on it? Exactly what you think would be happening on it.
I caught a little bit of this week's episode, just because it was like on in the background, and I was like, oh, this is still happening.
Everything is still awful. It is a terrible show. Did you catch the Ellis mention 2 weeks ago?
I think that was one of the first premiere episodes. I think I did.
Okay, because the episode ended with Angelica Houston's ex-husband, who has just become Ellis. Because that's the thing about this show. Even with new writers, they don't know how to make a villain. So they just decide, we're going to pick a character and have him do everything that makes the life difficult for our quote-unquote good and main characters. So now her ex-husband is just out to get her, but you don't know why. You don't know if it's because he wants her back. You don't know if it's because he's jealous. You don't know if it's because he just doesn't want her to succeed. There's no motivation whatsoever for this character other than he has to be evil. So he's evil, and the episode ended with him like getting a phone call from Ellis, and he realized Ellis was working for him. It's ridiculous and amazing.
I have a question. You were actually going through the whole thing, but I have a question that I'm interested in. Who's that guy who, like, why, I caught, like, the script read, that's the part that I caught.
Okay.
That new guy, and why did they think someone rewrote the script?
He is a dramaturg. A dramaturg is sort of, like, not a script doctor, but kind of, somebody that you would hire, both for new plays and for old plays. It's sort of a person you bring in to, the best description I ever heard, because in college we used to talk about this a lot. A dramaturg's job is to, if he or she is working with the playwright, the dramaturg's job is to ask questions. The dramaturg is essentially the person who sort of helps the playwright to say, like, you know, this isn't working, that's not working, or like, what is your play about? Maybe he's kind of the person who's supposed to like bring focus to it.
It's what we do for Glee every week.
Kind of. Yeah, you could say that if they were listening to us.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
I like that. We are the dramaturgs of Glee.
Yes, we are.
So in this case, it's like the dramaturg is kind of a failed playwright himself. And you have the, like, one person meets up with Deborah Messing and is like, oh, you know what he did on my friend's show? He like helped her out with it and then it sucked. And then he had his own script right there and ready to go. So then it's like planting doubt. Oh, maybe he's trying to get his own play produced. You don't know. And he's just there to, and that actor, Daniel Sonata, is like the kind of guy who's been in everything. He was on SVU for a long time as one of the medics. I saw him in a play years ago. I saw his penis. I saw him in Take Me Out. He was on Sex and the City. Like, he's just one of those guys who's in everything. And it just, they've given him nothing to do, but you're the handsome dramaturg who's going to argue with Deborah Messing and then probably fall in love with her, because that's what happens on these shows where they have no idea how human beings actually interact. Mm-hmm. But now the conflict, it's kind of an interesting conflict they've come to. The conflict is, so Deborah Messing has eventually rewritten her script, and now it's much darker, it's much, it's kind of much, it's less crowd-pleasing and probably more a good quote-unquote show. But the producer, Angelica Houston's husband, doesn't want to make that show because he knows it's not going to sell. Because that's essentially like putting Assassins on Broadway or putting a show that, you know, is not going to appeal to the tourist crowds on Broadway. And Tom, the songwriter, agrees with the producer and wants to go back to the workshop version, which was much more bubbly and kind of crowd-pleasing. So that is your conflict now. Meanwhile, in Brooklyn, which is a whole other paradise of Wonderland off of the G train.
They seem to be taking all the wrong notes from Glee. They're like, send some cast members to Brooklyn, check.
Yeah, and it's just the way they write it, it's hilarious. If you live in New York, it's like they have characters who are like, I've never been to Brooklyn before. Dude, you're a struggling young actor. Of course you've been to Brooklyn. Like, it's just, oh God, it's infuriating, but yet fascinating. So in Brooklyn, the other edgy show that's being written, it turns out the book writer, like the, I forget his name, is it Kyle?
Yeah,
the nice
sucked,
guy of the
right?
two. Yeah, he can't write. He's never written a show. He has no idea how to write. So now they're going to make it a sung-through musical, like Rent, which is going to be hilarious. I can't wait to see how this turns out. But I mean, the main thing about the show is doing, like, the show isn't even making ratings. It's doing terrible, as Beth has pointed out often on our Facebook group. So the main thing is, how long are they going to let it go? There's no way the show can come back next season. It's just, it's not worth it for the network, because it's an expensive show to make. I really hope they finish out the season, because I, you know, let them end the show in some crazy way where it's like at the Tony Awards and then somebody blows him up. I don't know. Like, let Ellis fly down. Let Ellis turn into a demon and take over things. I don't know. But yeah, that's Smash.
Oh, Smash.
I mean, the songs are still fun, except when Catherine McPhee comes in and proves why she should not be leading a show. But anyway, that's my thoughts on that.
All right, then. I'll catch up eventually, maybe. Or maybe I'll just jump back in now that I know what's going on.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Jennifer Hudson got a nice number or two out of it, but they gave her character nothing to do.
Yeah, well, she was like, what is that character going to do? Like, they casted her as, like, another Broadway star. So, like, what is she going to have to do? Nothing.
Right. Yeah, and they gave her, like, a weird subplot with her mother that didn't, like, was resolved with the song, kind of, but not really. It is a show. And it's funny, because so many of the problems were so evident last season as being fault of the showrunner, Teresa Rebick. But this season, like, it's funny to say, like, you're like, maybe the show is beyond repair, or maybe not. I don't know. But it's still just a mess. It's
yes.
Fascinating. And, I mean, other shows that we watch, RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes, RuPaul. Very exciting announcement. Emily and I just obtained tickets to go see something entitled RuPaul's Drag Race Battle of the Seasons with Judge Michelle Visage. So I don't know exactly what it entails, but Pandora Box is going to be there, and
Jinx
Ivy
Monsoon
Winters,
is gonna be there.
Jinx Monsoon, and Alaska.
Yeah, the other ones I don't know because they're from the seasons I didn't watch, but like I'm just so excited to see Pandora Box and Jinx.
It's also Carmen Carrera and
I do watch her.
Mimi, I'm First. You saw them both.
Oh my God, yes, I totally did.
Lisa told us that she would teach us their camp song to sing to Mimi, I'm First, because they went to camp together.
That's right, that's so awesome.
And yeah, Carmen Carrera was just like the body one.
I remember.
Like,
Carmen Carrera was just, yeah. Carmen
I have a body and I'm going to show it to you.
Keep showing it. And the judges are going to bring me back for no reason other than I have a body, I guess.
Yeah.
That pissed me off.
She got kicked off and then brought back. Yeah.
And then brought back and then kicked off the same episode because she sucked.
Yeah. So I'm not thrilled about her, but everyone else will be really fun. Pandora Box, I'm most excited about.
Oh, me too. It's going to be so exciting.
And then, yeah, like three of our favorites from this season. So
yeah, it's going to be a good time.
It's going to
be okay. We'll report back with a full report on that.
Yes. But other than that, this season, I think everything's pretty much status quo. We still have, you know, Jinx Monsoon is still a favorite.
Their girl, yeah.
She's the one who needs to do it. We've started a Twitter campaign to RuPaul. I'm back on Twitter.
Just for this reason.
Just for this reason, exactly. Basically, we want more fun, punny drag queens and less fishy ones. So it's hashtag more fun, less fish.
Yeah.
And everybody should tweet that at RuPaul as often as possible.
Yeah, I think this is an important campaign.
It is. It really is.
Because it is. Like, this season, like, there's so many, like, pretty girls, but they don't have, like, and I mean, the Snatch Game episode was what really made it so obvious of, like, you know, like, this is what a drag queen, I mean, granted, there's a lot of different definitions of a drag queen and what's in your repertoire, but being funny is kind of a huge part of it, and having a personality. And you could say, like, oh, I'm my own person, I'm not a, you know, I don't do impressions, but as a drag queen, like, you have to have something in your arsenal. And this season Snatch Game was so infuriating.
So depressing.
Because aside from Jinx Monsoon, obviously, who killed it, Alaska, who was very funny, and Roxy, the girls just, like, it was like they couldn't be bothered to do this. And it was really upsetting.
Yep. So. And as the judges pointed out, you know this is coming.
Yeah.
You made it onto RuPaul's Drag Race. You know that some of the challenges are the same every year, and this is one of them, and you should know how to do it.
It's like going on America's Next Top Model and being like, oh, but I don't walk.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Yes, you learn to walk in heels before you get on the show, honey.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, yeah, TV-wise, do you have anything else? Or?
I started a foray into finding out what all the hubbub is about My Little Pony.
That's right.
I don't know if our listeners know this, but My Little Pony has, like, made a resurgence. My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. And there are a lot of adults who are really enjoying it. They're saying it's a very well-written show and it's enjoyable at any age. So I've started watching it on Netflix to find out if it's true.
And is it?
It is. You know, it's really pretty to look at. And it definitely has, like, a lot of good lessons. I'm still very early in the first season, so I feel like maybe it needs a little more time to really, like, build up to what it is. But, because so far it's been like each pony gets their own episode and each pony represents, you know, a character trait that's really important, like bravery or trustworthiness or like whatever their things are. And, you know, one episode was about boasting, like, it, you know, it's okay to be good at something and exemplify that, but don't be. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So that's what it is right now, but it is really pretty to look at. It's just beautifully drawn and the characters are super fun. So
interesting. Yeah. And as I told you, I thought it was a sex thing.
Yeah, no, it's
I thought
a brony.
The whole brony thing was a fetish. So,
it's not, it's just male adults who enjoy My Little Pony, a combination of bro and pony brony.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. All right, okay. So are we ready to discuss a little bit of Glee?
Let's do this.
All right, this episode was written by Michael Hitchcock of everybody recognize. Well, he is on Glee. He plays the director of the Deaf School.
Yes.
But you would also recognize him from Best in Show and a lot of the Christopher Guest movies. Directed by Ian Brennan, one of the originals. And the Mookie just bumped his head on the table. It was funny. Sorry. Okay, the Glee cap goes. Ahem. After a mini hiatus, the New Directions return to distract themselves with Will's failed marriage by competing Girls vs. Guys style to movie soundtrack songs. Since Ohio is apparently 20 to 30 years behind the rest of the country, we get a lot of 80s and 90s flashbacks, including a revealing ghosting that inspires Marley to confess her feelings for Ryder to Jake. At the prodding of Finn, Will searches for Emma. Actually, at the investigation of Finn, Will finds Emma and they have a conversation that doesn't establish much. Back on the East Coast, Santana offers the theory that Brody is a drug dealer. Kurt struggles to get over Blaine with a very willing Adam. And Rachel cries on her favorite Lima Heights' native shoulders about that stick that was found in the bathroom. Risky business met Top Gun. Rachel worried about her oven bun. And man, that pottery sure looks like fun. And that's what you missed on Glee.
Oh, we did it good.
I know. So this episode was also, we should say, marked the 500th song that Glee has done.
Did
kind
it?
Of crazy. Yeah,
it's interesting.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
When you really think about it. But yeah, so we were back after a little hiatus. And not the biggest plot-heavy episode.
No. You know, I really wanted to like this episode, but
okay.
At this point, I just can't get past the fact that they're making references for our generation, and we're not the generation that's watching this show.
See, it's funny because I actually enjoyed this episode a lot. I didn't love it. I had a lot of major issues, but I thought over like the kind of overall just tone and jokes, like there was a lot for me to like about this episode. But that being said, I kind of didn't think about it until this morning. I'm like, wait, so kids today, you know, 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds, like they watch Top Gun and Ghost and like
and Say Anything.
A lot of references that are a little before their time.
Yeah. I was very thrown by that. And it also felt very, just the script felt very off to me because it was basically, oh, this episode's about movies. We'd better put as many movie titles as we can into this episode. Like, let's make a reference to Lars and the Real Girl that makes no sense. Like, wait, was it that movie or was it the other weird one?
No, I think it was Lars and the Real
Girl. It was, right?
Yeah.
So. That reference did not make sense. It was to Brody. And like that movie is about Ryan Gosling having a relationship with a mannequin. Like that.
But
is
I think
not...
it was no, it kind of makes sense because it's all like that he's a mannequin, so he's kind of the real girl in this scenario.
I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. It didn't make sense to me at the time.
I see. So why don't we break it down plot wise?
Yes.
Okay. So Will and Emma.
Okay. How long was Will away? Wasn't it like 3 months?
Oh, I thought it was longer. But you would assume they still saw each other.
Yeah, and she feels like he's a different person. Like, talk about a drama queen. This was ridiculous. It annoyed me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was, like, the conversation, which was kind of like, well, what do we do? Like, I don't know, let's just kind of start over. Let's take it. Like, that was believable, and I guess that's probably how couples would handle it if they didn't break up. But it's kind of boring. Like, now I'm like, okay, so next episode, are we just back to Will and Emma in the beginning? Like, it's just a really... From a kind of dramatic perspective.
How many times has this couple started over on this show?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a really... Because they've broken up and gotten back together like 3 times already.
Yep.
And so it's such a strange place to land them in. But I guess part of it is that something will change based on, you know, Finn confessing about the kiss, which is just stupid.
Yep.
And that just pisses me off. Because it...
And do you know what that moment is? That's Carrie telling Aiden she was having an affair.
Right. It is something
it's
that,
selfish.
Yeah, it is. It is a selfish, you don't need to do this. It's not going to make anything better for anyone. It's just going to make you feel better about yourself, except it's not. And you're just making things difficult and you're making things predictable or not from a dramatic point of view. I don't know. I don't generally enjoy when characters who are friends fight on TV. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like when my friends fight. I don't like when people fight. So I really don't like watching people fight. And I understand dramatic tension. People like fighting, except it not when it's these characters that the whole reason I like them is that they like each other.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not looking forward to this. I'm sure other people are, but I don't want to see them fight.
Well, the name of the next episode is Feud. So get
great.
So, yeah, Will, Emma, not a fan of this storyline.
Yeah, me neither. And then the other, let's, I guess, stay in Ohio and finish up with that.
Okay. Do they know who the fuck Kitty is? Like, well, can they
Erica,
pick a character trait for her and stick with it?
Well, she... No, I think it's less about her than it's more about you're Marley and this girl who has been trying to make your life a living hell out of nowhere says, by the way, I'm sorry and I was a bad person. So what do? You tell her your deepest, darkest secret, right?
Yeah, of course.
Right, totally. Yeah, naturally. Yeah, this I can't care. Even though I like Ryder, and I don't really have a problem with Jake, it's just you can't don't give me this love triangle. I don't give a fuck.
Yep.
And don't have Kitty just there just so you can use her when you need to, because it's not like she didn't even come to play in this episode. Like no. She's not the one who says something. Marley's the one who confesses. So, but yet you have her crossing her fingers, so you know something will come up with it. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's like they're hedging their bets. Like, they have her, you know, they have her apologize to Marley so Marley can say something so Kitty can cross her fingers so that you don't know whether she's going to do something or not. And it's like the show could next week make Kitty a bitch or they could make her genuine. And it's like, yeah, we don't know yet. So we're just going to have her be both right now.
Yep.
It's upsetting.
It is.
Yeah. All right, New York.
New York.
New York. So everybody snowed in, which, I mean, yeah, people were snowed
appropriate.
In.
Appropriate, yeah.
We did have Nemo.
It happened.
It did. We have Santana at first just being a cunt.
Yeah, but it was enjoyable cuntiness.
It was, and it kind of turned around into, like, cuntiness being helpful, which is what Santana does.
Yeah.
And so in the end, I'm like, oh, this is just obnoxious, but it worked in the end. And of course, she both suspects Brody and figures out Rachel's pregnant.
Yes.
Now, Brody, for her theory is drug dealer.
Right. How did we not go there first? Because he came out of the room, like, disheveled, right? Isn't that why we went to Gigolo?
I thought it was because he came out of, like, clearly it was a woman's room he came out of.
It was like...
I thought it was like a woman's hand or something.
Oh, no, I don't think there was any body parts except for Brody. But I think it was, like, clearly a hotel room.
The thing is, if he's a drug dealer, then why is he living in Bushwick, like, and not paying rent?
Well, he doesn't live in... Oh, well, he does
he's
now.
Living with them.
Like, now he does.
Yeah, so that's what kind of throws me off of that. But if he's a gigolo making money, why is he also living? I don't know. I kind of don't care about the mystery. I just want to know what the mystery is.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think gigolo.
I do too. But I feel like they wouldn't make Santana wrong.
No, I think they will. I really don't think she's right.
Okay.
I think drug dealer is too easy. I don't know.
I guess.
And then, of course, no, nothing happens with the pregnancy. We just know that Santana.
We just know she is pregnant.
Right. And
Well, she's pregnant according to
a home
pregnancy test, which are not always accurate.
We don't know what other steps she has taken. We figure that will come to play soon.
And I guess we do know that Santana thinks she looks chubby.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which, I mean, I don't know. How quickly do you get chubby when you're pregnant?
Well, I don't know. Do we think she's only, like, a month pregnant? Like,
I don't remember how many pages she went through in her journal.
Yeah, I don't know. Because she could have, like, completely missed a period and then been like, oh, it's been a really long time and already be up to, like, missing the second one without mm-hmm. realizing it. I feel like you could, like, if you're not on the pill, I feel like that could happen.
Oh, sure.
So she could be, like, 2-3 months, which I don't think you'd really be chubby yet.
Yeah.
But maybe she's eating her feelings. Maybe that's probably.
That's possible. And she's also freshman 15. Hello. Mm,
true.
So we've also got, and we've got Kurt, you know, still kind of pining for Blaine. And we've got Adam right there and ready to take him.
Yep.
And this, I don't know, I kind of like this. It worked for me. I think, you know, I like that they're just, you know, here's a nice guy who's, you know, not, who's just kind of, I don't know, this just kind of worked. Their chemistry worked. I like the idea that Kurt knows he's not really over Blaine, but he does want to try to get over him. And so, I don't know, I'm cool with this.
Yeah, I was all right with it. It worked for what it was.
Yeah, I'm curious where it will go. And, I mean, I like the idea of, like, are you, you know, what, I'm your rebound guy? Well, I mean, maybe. Like, yes, I just got out of a long relationship. So, technically you are, but it doesn't have to mean you're going to be this. I don't know, so we'll see. And I look forward to seeing that storyline more.
Okay.
All right, ready for songs?
Yep.
So the first one, I didn't write the name down.
You're all the world to me. From
okay.
Royal Wedding.
Right. So it's a very stylized, black and white, Fred Astaire.
Old-time movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was adorable.
It was really cute. I loved it. Yeah. Kind of the, like, far away shot, which I've never seen the movie. I'm guessing it was referencing that, but it was kind of, I'm like, but I can't see their faces from where I'm sitting. Like, I don't know. I can't really see anything. But it was just pure fun and the kind of thing I love when Glee does and wish it would do more of.
Well, yeah, I think it was more, you know, about the fact that they were dancing on the ceilings and less about their expression.
I suppose, but it was cute.
It was. It reminded me of the Jamiroquai video. And just made me curious if they built the whole room to turn like they did for that video.
We get the next song, which is a song that's very near and dear to my heart.
Yes.
Which was Shout. And that was the 500th song.
Oh, okay.
Now, Shout is important to me and my family because Shout is one of my dad's favorite songs. So at any, like, wedding or big event, my dad insists on dancing. And my dad, like, won't drink until he gets to dance to the song. Because it's, like, a big thing for him to do. And it gets very intense. So
why would he wouldn't it make it easier to dance to if he
no,
was drunk?
No, because he doesn't want to be like, he doesn't want to like be drunk or anything. Like he wants to be like ready and hydrated for it.
Okay.
Because he like seriously, like he gets all the way down, he gets all the way up. It's exhausting watching him do it. So I love the song, and like this was just pure joy to me to watch.
Yeah, it was just fun. It was fun. There was
everybody
wrong
had a good time. There's great choreography going on.
Yeah. Okay. Just a good time. Next was "Come What May" from Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they had just done "Elephant Love Medley."
I know, because that's our favorite.
I know, and "Come What May" is so boring.
I think it's a really pretty song, though.
It works in context of the movie, mm-hmm. but. And I mean, they did it in context of the movie, but it was just boring.
I don't know. I like the duet. Kurt was hitting higher notes than Nicole Kidman can hit.
Yeah, that's true.
They sounded good together, of course. We had some very Barbara Walter filtery flashbacks that were very fogged.
Yes,
I mean, I liked it. It was stylized. It was fantasy. It worked for me. I like the song now, so that helps.
Then the boys did, this has to do with the music, so, well, no, I'll save it for low notes. The boys did Old Time Rock and Roll and Danger Zone,
mm-hmm.
which are Bob Seger and Kenny Loggins, and from Risky Business and Top Gun. This was fun, actually.
I've never seen either of those movies.
Really?
Yeah, I know, isn't that crazy?
That's weird.
I know, it is kind of weird, but I've never seen either one.
Oh, I've definitely seen them both.
Yeah. This was cute.
It was super really cute.
It was totally adorable. It was all the guys, and the guys are just fun this season. When the guys do group numbers, I think it just really works with this group of fellas. It was just cute.
Which is basically the polar opposite of what happens when the girls
my God.
Do it.
Fuck this number. Okay, so you have the guys doing a really creative mashup where they're putting two songs together that don't go together, and then you have the girls just doing a scene from Moulin Rouge.
Yep.
It's not a mashup if it's already been mashed up for you.
This was weird for me because I forgot that they mashed them up in Moulin Rouge because I haven't seen Moulin Rouge in a while. I'm actually think I'm going to watch it tonight.
This movie totally made me want to rewatch it.
So I actually forgot that they were mashed up until I read your notes just now, but it really pissed me off that I went to Lisa and I was like, hey, you've seen Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, right? And she was like, yes, of course. So I was like, I haven't. What is the line that they say? Like, I was like, is the line, whatchamacallit, the Harry Ziegler line.
Yeah.
I was like, is that in that movie? And she was like, yeah, but it's Harry Winston because they're saying the names of jewelers. And I was like, oh, okay. And Ziegler is a character in Moulin Rouge, right? And she was like, yep. Yeah. I was like, yeah, Glee just did it and said the name of the character from Moulin Rouge. And that really pissed me off.
Right. Like, they couldn't even do Talk to Me, Will Schuster, tell me everything.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Or so just do like Ziegler, like what is his name? Harry Henry? I don't remember.
Harry Ziegler.
Harry Ziegler makes zero sense in the context of the show.
Absolutely
at least not. Harry Winston would have made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Made me so angry.
The only thing I could say for it was I thought Marley actually sounded really good.
I
liked her belting voice, but it pissed me off so much, especially when they tie, because that's fuck that. No, the boys did something unique and creative. And the girls just took a scene from a movie and did it.
And the other thing that really bothered me during that scene is that on their dresses, they had those stupid clear bra straps.
They did. Yeah, I noticed that too.
And it really annoyed me. Marilyn Monroe if she can dance around without clear bra straps on her dress, I think you guys can manage it.
It's not like any of those girls are busty, okay?
Yeah.
And I remember when those bra straps came out, because it was kind of like mid-90s, like late 90s, because I remember like when like I started to see girls wearing them, and I just think they look like I hate them. I think I understand like you don't want to show your bra strap. I don't like showing my bra strap, but then you just, you know, there's other things you could do first of all. And then the other thing, it's like, I see that you're wearing a bra. You just have this ugly piece of plastic rather than, you know, whatever color bra you're wearing. Oh, I hate those things.
Yep.
Oh God. Total low note.
Next was Will doing In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel from, from Say Anything, complete with trench coat and mm-hmm. boombox. This is the one that pissed me off and made me be like, do kids even get this reference? Like,
I know. I thought the same. Like, I can understand because it's Will and Emma, so they're older. So, like, they're around our age, which is crazy to say. So, like, they would know that ref. Like, that would be a reference for them. So, I can excuse it on those lines.
I guess.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
I don't even have anything else to say about it. Because
I don't either, because it was exactly kind of like, I mean, it's not that interesting a song vocally. Like, it's a pretty song, but it was like, all you need is the dude standing with the boombox, and it's like, okay, I get it. So, yeah, that was kind of that.
And then finally, do you want to hear my note?
Yes, I do.
The last people I wanted to see ghost are ghosting.
Right? If you're going to have characters ghost, you don't have Marley and Jake ghost.
Do we need to explain that we use the term ghosting for?
Ghosting is a verb. I'm sure you people are figured it out by now. And it means when you romantically make pottery.
It's called ghosting. It's a thing. I promise. We didn't make it up when we were drunk.
I mean, no. I mean, we happened to often use it when we were drunk, when we were talking about. I'm just remembering the context.
I know.
And it's very strange. But yeah, the characters are ghosting. And we don't want those characters to ghost.
No.
I would rather see Will and Emma ghost, okay?
Yeah, that would have been better. I don't think I want to see anyone left on Glee ghosting.
I don't know.
But I do. My favorite thing to think about, even though, you know, it's Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze, my favorite thing to think about is that it's actually Demi Moore and Whoopi Goldberg. Because, you know, he's in her body. So it's not really him. That makes me laugh.
Like, if you squint, they kind of look the same.
Oh, yeah. So maybe Marley and Unique should have ghosted. That would have made
sense. Oh, my God. That would have been amazing.
That would have been great. Oh, if they gave him dreads and they were like, okay, get to ghosting.
Rita Mae Brown.
I don't remember.
Okay. So, yeah, it's blah because it's them. And then Ryder's there, too. And then it's blah and just blah and blah. Moving on.
Do you want to talk about the last one?
Of course I do. It's Footloose.
I know. It's your jam.
It is my jam. This is one of my karaoke songs. I love Footloose. They do it. It's fun. It's nothing special, but it's fun. So it's fine.
Yep. Mm-hmm. High notes?
The first, 10 minutes of this episode were on.
They were.
It's like, there were so many great lines. Like, I liked when Kitty's tells Marley, you don't get dibs on Les Mis just because you look like the girl on the poster.
Yep.
I thought that was funny. Sam made a Not the Bees reference.
Yes!
Sam made a fucking Dream Warriors reference.
Yes!
I was like, I am there. And then the episode didn't keep going.
Yeah, if they had done Dream Warriors I would have been back on board.
I would have died, yes. Other high notes. Those are all the ones I wrote. Do I have any others?
I have, I'd watch an Eli Roth gay horror movie.
Oh, totally, totally. I liked them all hanging out in New York. Like, Rachel had her hair in a messy ponytail. They were sitting there eating. Like, I kind of dug that. And again, it makes me think how I'd rather watch that show.
Yeah. I think that's it.
But yeah, high note wise, I don't know. The songs for me were really fun. Other than the Moulin Rouge one, which pissed me off. You know, to me, Footloose and Danger Zone mashup and Come What May and Shout and the Will and Emma thing were really fun songs. And were just like probably some of my favorite stuff they've done this season. But there was just a lot of things I didn't care about. So.
Yeah.
So that's all the high notes you have?
Yeah.
All right, the low notes.
Basically just the fact that I feel like they feel that they're floundering in the water and now they're trying to jam everything that made them popular into one episode. Like, do you realize how many gimmicks we had this episode? We had girls versus boys, mashups, movies, and they did 8 songs in one episode.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, I feel like they're just pushing for ratings and it feels desperate.
That's interesting. And it was also their kind of comeback episode, too.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. I mean, for me, it kind of worked just because a lot of those things are things I really like about the show.
I know, but I feel a little used by it.
I could see that. I could see it.
I'm sorry. Didn't we already do a mashup episode this season?
Yes, we did, I think.
Like, we already had the girls versus boy mashup episode, so why are we doing it again? Like, it just felt like a very desperate attempt to be like,
here's
all the things you like, come back.
Yeah, and they're definitely running out of ideas.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how long the show goes on. Right now, they announced a lot of shows renewed for next season. They didn't announce Glee yet, but it's just, I think, because of contract negotiations. I can't imagine Glee not coming back next season. I'm sure it's coming back. I think it's just going to take another week before they hash out salaries and stuff. But I don't know. On one hand, it's a show that I feel like needs a final season. And I don't mean it needs to end. What I mean is, like, if 30 Rock proved anything, it's that every show needs to know when its last season is. Because you need time, especially a show that has so many characters, you need time to close it out. You need time to plan and have your characters say the right goodbyes and do everything like that. So they need to have that, like, okay, 2-year deal and we're going to end at season 7 or whatever it's going
to
be.
But I feel like they wouldn't even know what to do at that time if they got it.
Probably not. I would certainly agree with that.
Unless they hired Tina Fey to come in and help them. Like, they're not going to know what to do.
No, that's an excellent point. But I really think it would benefit Glee so much. We'll see. I mean, again, I don't know. It's going to be a show that I think is going to go off the rails so soon because they're going to, I think, figure out. I wouldn't be surprised if they start doing what David E. Kelly used to do with his shows, which, if anybody out there was an Ally McBeal fan, you know what I'm talking about. Because Ally McBeal, between seasons, Fox basically said, we're cutting your budget by a lot. So Ally McBeal fired half of its cast and gave no explanation for where they went. So all of a sudden, Ally McBeal's best friend, who'd been on the show forever and was her roommate, just wasn't there. And these new lawyers were not there. And Portia de Rossi was not there. Like, it was bizarre if you were a fan of the show, because it showed how the show had no respect for its audience to say, like, oh, all these beloved characters, this is what happens. And I wouldn't put it past Glee to, like, come back next season and not have Marley and Jake and just explain it away somehow if they realize it's not clicking.
Yeah.
Or if they're just like, we're going to focus about on New York or something. I don't know. But I feel like they're going to have to do it sooner or later because they're going to realize things are not working the way you're doing the show right now. So we'll see.
Yep.
You know, we'll see.
We might not see on a podcast, but we'll, you know, we'll see.
we will see. All right. So overall, rate, I can't speak anymore. Overall thoughts on the episode, if you had to kind of give it a rating, where would you say it falls for you?
I guess C-.
Wow, that low.
Yeah, it was just, well, it's average. C is average.
I understand. Yeah. For me, I would go B-. I like this episode more than I've liked a lot of the other episodes, and it had a lot of things going. I enjoyed watching it. I just had a lot of problems with it.
Yeah, they're never getting me back.
Oh, how sad.
I'm gone. I'm too far gone. I'm too cynical about it.
All right, so why don't we get to some feedback?
Let's do it.
Okay, we got two bits of feedback. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
Sure, I go first. This one is from Brianne. It is subjected, draw me like one of your French girls.
Yeah.
And it says, hello, ladies of Gleecast. I'm going to keep it brief this week. I live off movie soundtracks, always have. So it's nice to have a soundtrack episode of Glee. I'm actually hanging out with my middle school age cousin today, and I'm bringing all of the following movies from my adolescent years and subsequently listen to the soundtracks on a loop. They include Clueless, Romeo and Juliet, Empire Records, Can't Hardly Wait, 10 Things I Hate About You, etc. I'm a sucker for teen romance.
We won't talk about Empire Records because it gets me and Erica into a heated debate.
Yeah, it does. We don't agree about that. On that note, I was so excited they did a song for Moulin Rouge. Two songs from Moulin Rouge, Brianne.
Uh-huh.
My best friend and I definitely drove around singing this at the top of our lungs before we were old enough to go to bars and clubs. I would have been happier if it meant that Clean was back together rather than a fantasy, but I see what you did there, Glee. Drag along those cleaners for a little bit longer, tug at their heartstrings. Shout, fun number, made me want to dance. Can I just say that Blaine's pedal pushers still drive me crazy? And I mean that in a good way. It is so sneaking adorable. I think I've made it perfectly known that he's the reason I still watch. Why does Kurt talk like that about she's having a baby? I've never seen the movie. Is that the way the character talks? I had to rewatch that line just to make sure he really sounded like that. He did read those lines kind of weird.
I haven't watched that movie since I was a kid, I think.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's a weird, because it just tonally, it's weird because it's John Hughes, but it's like his adult John Hughes. Mm-hmm. So it's a little darker, but it's been so long since I've seen it that I can't remember.
Jake's shirt needs to be longer for the Top Gun Risky Business mashup. Too dangerously close to the junk. And no one wants to see that. And then Ryder jumps and we catch a glimpse. They really do love this 9 p.m. time slot. These girls use another song from Moulin. The girls use another song from Moulin Rouge. Was there a shortage of movie soundtracks they could get the rights to? That's not to say I didn't enjoy it, but I just think they could have found another movie to reference. Now, Say Anything is definitely one of my favorite movies of all time. I seriously thought Lloyd Dobler ruined my chance of ever finding a boyfriend because no one would ever look up to his greatness.
Aww.
However, taking the boombox scene out of context, I always thought if a guy did that to me, it might seem a little crazy. I guess it's not creepy when you already have an established relationship with a girl. Anyway, I like Emma's nightgown. Your Eyes is a fantastic song, and I like the realistic moment when Will had to tell the kids to leave. I've never seen Ghost. It's a question mark, though. She said it. She asked, I've never seen Ghost? Am I a bad child of the 80s? It's always on TV, but I never catch the beginning. Same thing with Top Gun. Watching Jake and Ryder scenes back and forth, it really reinforces that I enjoy Ryder to Jake. He's just a better actor, and it looks like better kisser. But I wish they were fighting over a better girl that I cared about.
I think you should see Ghost, by the way.
Ghost is a fun movie.
I'm not a big romantic movie person, and I just enjoy Ghost.
I hadn't seen it until probably maybe like within the last 5 to 8 years, I think. Because I remember like being like, oh, I've never seen this. I have to watch this. Like I made a conscious decision to watch it. But it's a fun movie.
It's fun. Whoopi Goldberg is wonderful in it.
Yeah.
Like there's a reason she won an Oscar for that movie. And she steals the movie. But Patrick Swayze is really earnest. And you've got like also some scary stuff going on in there. I don't know. I was thinking about that scene earlier today, I guess. Like the scene on the subway with Vincent Schiavaglia, whatever his name is. Schiavelli. The get off my train!
Yeah.
I was like, that was kind of freaky. But anyway, so see Ghost.
Brian continues. What exactly is Finn's role now that Mr. Shu is back? Is his job title sits in the back of the choir room? Go back to the tire shop. I don't have much else to say on the episode. It was fun. I do a whole lot more, but sometimes you just need that filler. Until next week when the fangirl in me comes out full force in Sync and BSB mashup. What? Brian.
Yeah, that's right. We get boy bands next week, it looks like.
I think just that one. The rest of them aren't boy bands. But it's more mashups. See, they're like, we're like Glee.
But at the same time, if they're doing, I know. But I like the mashup just because it's the whole point for me of Glee was reinterpreting songs.
Which
so reluctant
is
to.
Why I'm saying it's too little too late.
Yeah, I can understand.
I feel like I'm being forced. It's being forced on me. I don't like forcible things.
Fair enough.
All right.
Okay. Beth writes to us, entitles her email, Glee episode 415, Girls and Boys on Film. Hi, Emily and Erica. I hope all is well in New York. Our weather in Texas has fluxed between the low 40s and the high 80s. Damn it. It is fucking gorgeous outside today here.
Yeah, it is nice outside.
Been outside? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I ran this morning and it was kind of cold still. But then I just went out to go food shopping and it is. Oh, God, it's beautiful outside today. Anyway, sorry. I got very passionate about that because I've just been dying for nice weather. Like, I want to go outside and walk through the park. I want to sit down outside. I just want to do things outside, and I haven't been able to, and today I can. Anyway, 1 minute you're bundled up in sweaters. The next you wish you could take a dip in the pool. Seems Glee has some weather, too, and it's mostly cold. Snowstorms in New York City. Well, at least Bushwick. Snow on the ground in Ohio, which was really fake snow in California. That last one must have been fun. Can you see it? Pull out the snowmakers, kids. We are going to make us some genuine Ohio snow. More on that later. Girls and Boys on Film opens with You're All the World to Me from Royal Wedding, 1950. A totally delightful dance sequence done with the marvelous turning room. What a fun dream sequence for Will. Flashback to season 2, Will watching Singin' in the Rain. Will is such a sucker for old musicals, and so am I. It's a good thing. And then it begins. Tons and tons of movie references. It's like the writers all got together and listed out every iconic movie they could think of and then made references to them. There are so many hidden homages to movies that I couldn't keep up. And honestly, some I missed and I haven't seen before out there. Oh, and I haven't seen every movie out there. As a bonus, we are treated to some little moments in the choir room. I live for little moments in Glee. Unique knows all there is to know about The Crying Game. Artie's micro-budget feature. This films with teeny tiny budgets. You know, let's have a garage sale and sell our blood plasma to raise some more money for our budgets. There is a set amount, and successful films have been made on budgets as low as $200. Examples of films you might have heard of: David Lynch's Eraserhead, made for $10,000. Clerks, $27,000. By comparison, Blair Witch Project had a much bigger budget of $60,000. Blaine is clearly interested in Artie's making a movie, and Sugar wants to do the artist so they don't have to sing. Oh yeah, Sugar's back.
Yeah.
I'm happy, but okay, Sugar's back. Okay, moving on. Finn putting his arms around Will. Creepy. And you could tell Will felt the same way. I love Sue's meta-filled speech to Will, where she called him out on all his flaws, complete with baby-hating. Oh my god. OMG. Did Marley just have a minor conversation with the seniors in the hallway? Fortunately, we were spared wind beneath my feet. Thank you, Lee Writers. Okay, I love Shout. It's hard to explain the impact Animal House had on the college-age population at the time it came out. I was not in college, but in the Navy and attending basics training in Orlando at the time. Boy, did we have fun. Toga parties, lots of mashed potato zits in the chow hall, goofy pranks in barracks, all good fun, and best of all, the drinking age in Florida was still 18. A good time had by all. Ah, I'm envious of those days. I mean, no, truthfully, no, it's probably better that I couldn't buy alcohol officially until 21, but... Mm-hmm. You know. I did have one weird association with the film, and Glee, Donald Sutherland's butt under the sweater, remember that? Can't you just see that scene recreated with Quinn and the college professor she's sleeping with? I don't think Glee can even go there. Still, it would be fun. Back to New York, and Santana is not loving it. Feeling a little cabin fever, she goes on the attack. She's suspicious of Brody, and rightly so. I mean, who uses a pager anymore but drug dealers? And I haven't used a pager since 1992. Santana goes after Kurt and Blaine in front of Adam. She pulls out all the baby-themed DVDs she can find and eggs on Rachel, thus in my mind, confirms Rachel's pregnancy. Kurt appears clueless about Rachel's condition and joins in. Now, I have always loved bitchy Santana, so I am loving this. Kurt untimely picks Moulin Rouge to watch, so cleaners everywhere can have their come-what-may number complete with flashbacks. I will admit, I am not a Moulin Rouge fan. I sort of watched it once and remember nothing more than Nicole Kidman on a swing. I do not have any emotional attachment to the film, like many of the viewers do, so if my feelings aren't as intense as some of my fellow cleaners are experiencing. I do think it's interesting, as we are given a glimpse into how Kurt sees Blaine, devastatingly handsome, more mature looking than his high school personification. Now, should we read into white bow tie Kurt and black bow tie Blaine? Interesting that Kurt makes the first move in holding Blaine's hand, but then again, this is Kurt's fantasy, and he can feel as emboldened and comfortable to do as he pleases. Then back to reality. Kurt is fighting tears, Rachel is fighting throwing up, and Adam, who is not clueless, is questioning Kurt. Kurt breaks into a lie about context. I don't know about you, but all I get is this icky feeling this Adam-Kurt relationship is in trouble already. But Santana isn't afraid to call him out. But then Santana switches gears and attacks Brody. I love her description of him, his plastic shaved body, his smells, and her description of his probable porn star landing strip makes me glad Glee is not on at 9 instead of 8. Glad it is on at 9 instead of 8, as we get these utterly delicious mature lines. Kurt's reaction shot is priceless and makes us all wonder why. I would assume a nicely groomed Blaine would at least be trimmed. Aww. I love the exaggerated Santana going through everyone's drawers, pockets, etc. Season 2 Santana at her best. And then I realized how much more character-driven the writing of the New York cast seems. Why did we not get that spinoff? Red hair, Finn and Artie. It's nice seeing Emma's folks again. Emma's dad calling out Glee's hilarious policy towards college applications. Meta at its finest. Donnie Most is a lefty. That makes me weirdly happy, as I am a lefty too. Back to New York City, and Santana pretends to wipe her nose after snorting imaginary coke. I want more conversation, but they flash back to McKinley, and Sugar makes a reference to the most awesome movie of all time, Howard the Duck. Oh, I forgot about that. And I want to jump up and scream with joy. Although, again, you make a good point, Erica, now that I'm thinking about it, because, yeah.
Yeah, every...
Teenagers do not really know Howard the Duck.
No.
Mm-hmm. My pirated VCR copy wore out, and getting a new DVD copy is nearly impossible. I can't find a copy of Neverending Story either, so if anyone can hook me up. Beth, I actually believe I have seen Neverending Story in, like, bargain bins at,
yeah,
like, Best.
I feel like, I don't think I do, but I feel like I've seen it a lot of times. I was going to say I feel like I own it, but I don't actually think I do.
I think Neverending Story is one of those movies that's, like, the rights are out there, so it ends up on, like, combo packs. Like, I know the sequels are, like, on, like, random condom packs, combo packs, but I think you can find it. Same with, I think Howard the Duck just got a re-release, I thought. Yeah, Beth, re-look up Howard the Duck on Amazon. I think it might have recently been re-released, so you might be able to get a recently, decently priced copy. And Neverending Story, I will keep my eyes out for you.
Okay. I watched that recently. Where did I watch it? Maybe it's on Instant Watch.
It used to be on cable all the time. I don't know that it still is, but...
I think I watched it on Instant Watch.
Interesting.
I know I watched it recently.
Okay.
It will.
So we'll look out for you then.
It's $2.99 to rent on Instant Video, or it's $9.99 to buy it on digitally on Instant Video, or there are definitely copies of DVDs of it on Amazon.
Okay.
It's,
so
it's $11.99 on Amazon on DVD.
Okay,
so
not
there.
Bad.
It's there. It's easy to. Why was it so hard to find? It's on Blu-ray too.
Beth, look harder.
Beth, it's on Blu-ray for $10 on Amazon. You could get it.
I love how Blu-rays are cheaper than DVDs sometimes. That happened with Spartacus. I bought the next season because it was like $25 on Blu-ray and like $50 on DVD. I'm like, okay, well that's easy.
Yeah, and it's sold by Amazon, so it's not like you're buying from another.
Nice.
Because it's Prime eligible. So.
Very nice.
There you go.
All right. Beth continues. The boys do a mashup, the old-time rock and roll Danger Zone, and I get chills as it feels like season one. I really liked it. I was disappointed with the girls' mashup. To me, it really lacked something. Yeah, Beth, us too. Back to Nyada, and Kurt is practicing his spins again. Remember when he did that back in season one? So cute. Adam comes in, and in a beautifully well-acted and poignant moment, asks Kurt if he is his rebound.
I'm going to stop you for a second. Okay. Howard the Duck is also available on DVD on Amazon for $6.99.
I think it was newly re-released.
So yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was out of stock for out of print for a while. And then I think they just recently re-released it. So Beth, to Amazon you go. She continues. I fell in love all over again with Chris Colfer's acting style as he wears his emotions on his sleeve so well. Adam is sweet and earnest. He knows he can't compete with a fantasy and Kurt insists he is trying to get over Blaine. We all know it is a losing battle and I realize I liked Adam a lot and I don't want to see Kurt hurt him. The two hold hands. Okay, I care more about Adam than all the other new kids combined. Why isn't your York stuff so much better written and acted? Say anything moment, say anything moment. Okay, I started squeeing. I absolutely love this movie. I can see Lloyd holding up his boombox for Diane. I love John Cusack. Going to do my own double feature soon. Say anything and Better Off Dead. If you haven't seen both, get them. I've never seen Better Off Dead.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
Better Off Dead is so good. It's one of my favorites.
I will put it on my
list. Well, it's on TV all the time.
No, I just never did it. Look at all the snow and it's pristine and then I have a minor problem with the whole setup. There is no cold breaths coming out of Will's and Emma's mouths. Their ears and noses aren't red and I pull out a moment. See, Emily and Erica, there are a few little things that Glee annoys me with. Another hand-holding moment, a second couple. Is there a pattern formed with doom lovers? And am I reading too much into this again? Santana and Rachel. Rachel breaks my heart and makes me cry. I realize what a great little actress she can be because I totally bought the moment. Santana was perfect and I thought that scene was as a whole, sublime. Ghost moment with Marley and Jake. Some hand-holding, if you count that whole pottery wheel stuff, which was really sensual in the movie and not so on Glee. Say, didn't the dude die? Are we going to be treated with the death of Jake? Could we take Marley out, too? Oh. Anyway, there's a doomed ending. I might be onto something.
He was already dead, though.
That's true. Maybe so is Jake.
Maybe he is
right about that.
Speaking through Unique.
Oh my God. Oh, my God. Hey, Glee, remember, we're your dramaturgs. Listen.
Yes, it's really unique that Marley is carrying on this conversation with. Jake's been dead the whole time, but she sees him. She sees Unique as Jake and can see both Unique and Jake at the same time.
I'm there. I'm right there with you, Erica. Beth continues, I would say something about the song, but, you know, you can't find anything nice to say. 4 years of girls versus boys and 4 years of no winner. Some things never change. Then the best scene of the night didn't happen. Will beating the shit out of Finn. Blood flying all over the place. It would have been great, but no. Will wimps out, totally bummed. Footloose song again. I get chills, feel so season one, and I love happy nostalgic feelings bubbling up. Now, some thoughts on the show as a whole. I liked tonight's episode. While it wasn't stellar, it was very much a throwback to early Glee with its theme and music choices. I did notice a huge difference between the quality of writing and acting between McKinley and New York. I was pleased to see Blaine featured on so many songs, and because I like Blaine and wish he would come over, sit on my couch, and sing to me. Don't we all? As of Friday the 8th of March when this was written, Glee had not been renewed for season 5. No doubt it will be renewed. Live viewing ratings are down, but DVR plus 3 and plus 7 are amazing. For the I Do episode, Glee had a whopping 82% increase of viewing DVR over live. It seems we are still watching Glee, but on our own time, not the one set for us by networks. Fox is currently encouraging DVRing. It is promoting its newest show, The Following, with a DVR tag. Now, naysayers proclaim the networks don't pay attention to DVR numbers, but it is apparent Fox is taking them very seriously. Glee's numbers are very healthy worldwide. Yeah, I think I cannot see how ratings are going to still be done the same way. And I know with DVR, the issue being you can't really sell commercials if a show is a better DVR show mm-hmm. because you're not advertising. So my prediction will be we'll get more of those annoying little side commercials in the bottom of your screen.
Yeah.
Which right now they just do for TV shows, but I think they'll start doing those for, you know, aspirin and everything else.
Or there's just going to be even more product placement in the show.
Or more product placement, yeah. Because there is just no way you can count Nielsen ratings over DVR. And again, that's why shows like Big Bang Theory and NCIS are huge ratings compared to Glee. It's because the audience is older and they're not DVRing.
Yep.
The shows with younger audiences, more people watch them DVR because that's the way we kind of now have grown up and schedule our time. I don't think about TV schedules anymore. And it's ratings have to start taking that into account. There's no way they can't.
Agreed.
Yep, my rant is over. So season 5 rumors are starting to surface. I don't mind sharing rumors, as unlike spoilers, they are just rumors and subject to change. To me, spoilers are based on filmed items and giveaway plot points. As the show is under negotiations, it is speculated certain actors and their characters will not be coming back. My guess is Mercedes, Mike, and Quinn. We will not see Graduation this season, nor Nationals. Season 5 will pick up right after Regionals and be super heavy with less emphasis on the newbies. Halfway through the season, the kids will graduate and the show will become New York heavy. If there is a season 6, then it might be negotiated in as well. Remember, season 2 and 3 came as a package. It would all be New York. The names I have heard bantered around are Rachel, Kurt, and Santana. Nothing about Finn or Blaine at this time. Well, I am looking forward to next week's feud between Finn and Will. Don't disappoint me, Glee writers. I want blood. Catch you later, ladies. From Beth.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you, Beth. It'd be interesting. I don't know. There's a lot in the future that is so up in the air, but it can go a lot of ways.
That it can.
But I think she does nail it, especially now that Santana's in New York. It's hard to compare. It's apples to oranges, and yep. I like oranges more.
Yep, I agree.
All right, so do we have anything else, or are we sending the folks off?
I think we'll send them off with champagne wishes and caviar dreams.
Now I'm kind of hungry. Actually, I'm starving.
I'm starving, too.
That's besides the point. The problem, because I just finished book 5 of Game of Thrones, and I've been watching season 2. And as a result, I don't know if this happens to you, I just crave meat.
Really?
I crave meat, like wine and beer and meat, because that's what they eat in the show.
Okay.
And my mother sent me home with corn. I came out to Long Island last weekend, and my mom like had cooked, and she's like, "Oh, take all this food home with you." And she sent me with a Ziploc bag of corned beef. And I've just been eating
it. Just sitting on the couch, like with the Ziploc bag, okay. Like
because I'm sure I could like heat it up and stuff, but like then I have to have a side with it. So instead, I just like grab a little piece of it and sit there and eat it cold and just like taste like the saltiness in my fingers. And it's just because I'm just like, it's in a Game of Thrones mode, and it's a problem because I know it's not very good for me. But I'm running a lot, so I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
All right.
It's only this time of year people make corned beef. So
I know it'll be done soon. We'll be okay. I'll go back to just drinking wine. That'll help.
All right. Well, that's Glee. If you want to get in touch with us, it is gleecast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Or our Facebook page.
Yes, that's the best place, Facebook page.
Yeah. Until next we meet.
We'll talk to you soon. Be well.
Be well.
We still haven't. How have we still not gotten better at ending the show?
No. I got nothing. I don't know.
All right,
I'm not good at ethics. Bye.
Bye.
So you know how we're really bad at ending episodes?
It looks like we didn't have to end this one.
I know. It's kind of like it was all for naught, or perhaps it was done for a reason. Perhaps it was our lesson to ourselves that, yes, we don't have to end them that way.
Yes, because we're back briefly.
We're back, yes, with this coda, if you will, where we have feedback from the one and only Wayne Kotke, which came in probably like, what, 20 minutes after we finished recording?
Yeah, about. Maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah, and it's the weekend. We still got time. You people aren't pressuring us yet, so we figured, okay, let's tack this one back on there.
Yeah, so here we are.
We are. So Wayne titles his email, Glee names an episode after one of Emily's old podcasts. Indeed, indeed. And Wayne writes, frickin' frack. I know I said I was done sending in email feedback to Gleecast, but I have had some time in my hands, so I figured, what the hell? I hope I haven't missed my third consecutive recording deadline. Well, you did, no, you but didn't. Extended it, so you didn't, so it's fine.
We were just kidding about that.
Exactly. Anyway, Girls and Boys on Film was just another instance of Glee taking a bunch of random junk, melting it down, and vacuuming it, it sounds very Face-Off-like, into the shape of a television episode. It wasn't good, it wasn't bad, I don't think anything of lasting consequence happened in it. So let's just open its abdomen and take a gander at its innards, shall we? The episode peaks with its very first scene, the black and white thing with Will and Emma getting footprints all over the walls and ceilings of that weird gravity-free room. I'm assuming a stationary camera was attached to a revolving set. I saw something like that on the DVD extras of David Cronenberg's The Fly. Will remains boring as shit, even when he's trying to be campy and over the top. But the charms of this can't be denied, and you've got to admit, it's a pretty nifty little bit of filmmaking. I would say that it was all downhill from there, but it was actually peaks and valleys along the way. The Glee title card with its film scratches and projector noises was a nice touch, right? I agree, that was cute. Yeah. But then we're back in the goddamn choir room with goddamn Will writing a goddamn word on the goddamn blackboard and explaining the goddamn assignment of the goddamn week to goddamn Glee Club. I mean, holy cunt fucking Christ, Glee. How many goddamn episodes like this do you have to do? Goddamn. Boys Against Girls mashups. Was this episode written by the Gleomatic 5000 computer?
Yes, it was.
It's like you heard our podcast already, Erica. I still don't buy the Will-Finn friendship, but I did like Finn yelling movie titles at Will. Stand and Deliver, Zero Dark Thirty is a candidate for the line of the episode. To me, the Sue-Finn scene was an example of Glee doing a self-parody thing correctly. I really liked how Sue went into one of her typical Sue rants and then just cut away in the middle of it to Finn saying, the point is, Sue didn't know. That's true. I like that. And this leads to a friendship, or at least screen pairing, that I do cherish. Finn and Artie. Artie, as I've always said, is one of Glee's very few characters who possesses both a three-digit IQ and a passing familiarity with the real world. Finn, of course, has neither, so they make a good comedy team. One of the problems with an episode like this is that it turns into the kind of high-spirited but karaoke-like entertainment you'd expect to find at a second-tier amusement park. Case in point, song number 500. Jesus, 500? Shout. The Glee kids just cut the balls off this song and turn it into the whitest thing since Whitey came to Whiteville. And doing a cover is like making a Xerox of a Xerox. The results tend to be faded. Aw, I liked it, but I'm also really white. And I'm used to seeing really white people dance to the song, so maybe that was it. Oh, God. Santana, shut the fuck up. You dropped out of college. You moved to New York. You invited yourself to live in Rachel and Kurt's loft. And what do you spend most of the episode doing? Complaining about everything and making unfunny would-be catty comments. How are you ever my favorite character? Still have nothing but love for Naya Rivera, though. Yeah, and that's how I felt in the beginning of the episode. But it's turned around. But, I mean, in that first scene, I was with Wayne. Oh, I get it all. All those DVDs are movies with pregnant women. That is so clever, Glee. And thanks for having Chris Colfer actually explain all this directly to the camera so that we don't have to figure it out on our own. But seriously, I wish they'd thrown in Ingmar Bergman's Brink of Life. If Glee did Brink of Life, the musical, they'd have a lifetime pass from me. I have never seen Brink of Life.
Me neither.
I haven't seen a lot of Bergman films. I've seen the, like, horror ones, Seventh Seal and Virgin Spring, but that's it. The big Moulin Rouge claim fantasy scene was probably the episode centerpiece, but I didn't feel one way or another about it. I can only give it two shrugs and a meh. Sorry. Are we supposed to care about Kurt's relationship with Bilbo or Frodo or whoever the hell that guy is? He's kind of Hobbit-like. I didn't think about that. And how long has Chris Colfer been highlighting his hair? I haven't noticed. But I'm sure he took lessons from Rachel's ombre effect. Brody's supposed to be a drug dealer and not a man whore? I had my heart all set on man whore. Drug dealer's not going to cut it. Do better, Glee. I still think man whore. Or porn star. But that's me.
We shall see.
Wayne continues. It might strike many as being too silly, but I enjoyed the scene with Finn and Artie. Again, congealing it into a great comedy team. Donning ridiculous ginger wigs and meeting with Emma's parents, I was glad to see Emma's parents again. I mean, it's Donnie fucking Most, after all. And the erstwhile Ralph Mouth gets in a few digs at the show's many logical flaws. It's so weird how Glee really readily admits its mistakes in virtually every episode. Instead of fixing them, they just admit them. That's a good point. After more inconclusive crap at the New York loft, it's time for Glee's big Tom Cruise tribute. This is really well timed because Tom's never been more popular or more beloved by the public than he is right now in 2013. I have to point out that this is not really a mashup. Glee's mashups have devolved into two songs keep interrupting each other. And it was wasn't necessary to have it explain the connection between these two songs. Either you already get it or you don't care. Stop explaining shit, Glee. Yeah, but Wayne, you have to remember, the audience hasn't seen these films, even though the characters have, which makes no sense. Yeah. But anyway. So Marley and Kitty are still frenemies. Marley's still dumb as a sack of doorknobs. What else is new? The Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend Material Girl mashup is equally ungainly and uninspired. Material Girl is not from a movie at all. Its video was inspired by Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, yes, but that doesn't make it a movie song. We'll interrupt. Wayne, maybe you haven't seen Moulin Rouge, but this just comes completely out of Moulin Rouge. This entire sequence, that entire mashup, it is straight out of Moulin Rouge. So, yeah, it is a movie song. It just... We already expressed our anger about that. Mm-hmm. Ladies of Glee class, perhaps you can explain this to me. What are Diamonds a Girl's Best Friend? Unless you're going to pawn them or use them to cut through glass so you can rob people, what the hell good are they once you have them? Let's say a guy gives you a diamond necklace. How is that going to pay your rent or buy cat food, as the song suggests? That song is straight up bullshit. I can't help. I don't know. They're not my best friends.
Yeah, they're not mine either.
Still don't care about Curtin, what's his name? Oh, and it's another Finn and Will scene with snare drum music. Great. Emma needs to listen to a song called Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves. Maybe then she wouldn't spend her days moping in bed while wearing what seems to be a lime green nightgown from the Florence Henderson Signature Collection. Well, that's fitting with Emma's style, though, so yeah. I did like...
And her and Rachel shop at the same shop, apparently.
Yes, that's right. There's probably like three nightgown stores in Lima, and they shop at that one, and everybody else goes to the other one. This scene shows what an inconsiderate fuckwad Will is. Emma's sister's house is far enough away that he had to drive there. But he goes alone while the poor Glee kids apparently had to walk in there in what seems to be pretty cold weather. Do not take this guy back, Emma. And dear sweet Lord in heaven, somehow this story circles back around to Will's trip to Washington. I really thought we were done with that. I really did. But we weren't. We really weren't. When it's convenient, they weren't. I guess we're supposed to be all, like, moved and shit by Rachel and Santana's heart-to-heart, but Santana's been such a dick this whole episode that I didn't buy her sudden left turn into sincerity. I just fast-forwarded clean through the Jake Marley pottery scene. No, thank you. Wait, do I have to make one comment because it applies to two stories? Why do all these characters in this show think that a single wayward kiss is such a huge deal? You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. And bless you, Glee, for not ruining that song by mashing it up with A Kiss from a Rose or some shit. Give it time, Will. Remember, we're their dramaturgs. You just gave them an idea. When Will announces that everyone is a winner, watch how Ryder reacts. It's fucking hilarious. It's high fucking hilarious. After some final Will-Finn bullcrap with both of them acting like big babies, it's time for one of Glee's patented feel-good endings, and it's here where we dip into cover band at a theme park territory once again. Maybe there is someone out there who wants to see the Glee kids singing and dancing their way through Footloose. Second Kenny Loggins song of the episode, by the way. But that person is not the one writing this email. I fast-forward through this. Why, oh, why couldn't they have done I'm Alright from Caddyshack instead? And next week's show, at least according to the promo, will be nonstop shoving matches. I genuinely look forward to that. So that was Girls and Boys on Film. Funny, I guess. Fun, I guess. But nothing I or anyone else ever needed to see. It's one of those episodes I will probably forget very soon. Until next time, the balcony is closed. And he adds a P.S. in honor of Diddy in honor of Brody. He looked for it on YouTube, but couldn't find it. So Wayne made an MP3 of it himself. If you can tack it on to the end of the episode, Erica, and then we don't have to end it.
Yep.
We can just be like...
And oh, no, here's... wait. I started playing it by accident.
Oh, shit. Shit. Abort. Abort.
I clicked on it by accident. Were you able to hear it?
No.
Okay.
But well, I seem to have headphones that I can only hear in one ear, so that could be why.
It's on the recording, so I apologize to everyone listening. I'll start it in just a second. Oh, I tried to move it into the folder as I downloaded it, and I played it instead.
You're getting written up.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you, Wayne.
Thanks, Wayne.
Always a pleasure to have your feedback.
Yes, and we'll try and be a little more conscious of posting on the Facebook page when we're recording.
Yeah, it was another one of those weeks where we had an opening, so we just kind of grabbed it.
Yeah, we jumped on it.
Yeah. Next week...
We did all this already.
Oh, no, I was just trying to figure out when we're recording next week, but we'll figure that out. So, but we will update you.
We'll update, yeah.
Fine.
All right.
All right. Well, all the pleasantries remain as they were 10 minutes ago.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Uh-huh. Now here's an MP3.
Bye.
Well, I got a job selling marijuana to confused college kids because I wanna make some cash selling hash tax-free. Well, the cops won't bust me because I'm not a crack dealer with a gun, no gun. I'm a corporate executive's son, just looking for fun, 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 fun. I'm a small-time drug dealer. I'm a small-time drug dealer. I'm a small-time drug dealer in your town. All right, let's give it to him now. Just the other day, but now I got something I wanna say. Like I could have been killed in that county jail, but fortunately my dad supplied the bail, so I wouldn't have to serve any more time.
small time drum.